Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello.
And welcome to the Samina Spin. Edison welcomes you as well and is ready to attack whatever dubious kitty is in the backyard, so please don't mind him. I hope you're having a beautiful Wednesday evening. It's nice and if I say Wednesday, it's Thursday. I hope you're having a beautiful Thursday evening. It's nice and sunny where I am. I hope it's sunny where you are as well. Today's podcast is called Badly Behaved Muslim Women Who Made History. When I was thinking about what to do with this podcast, this dog is choosing to bark as soon as I start talking. Come here. Come here. Sit down. Okay. So just wait for it. He'll probably start barking when I decide to talk again. So in honor of Women's History Month, I chose to do something that focused on a particular contribution of women. And I thought about what I wanted to do. And I decided on focusing on Muslim women in particular. And the reason I focused on Muslim women is because when you think of Muslim women, you think of a single narrative, the veiled, oppressed woman who can barely leave the house. That's what a lot of people think of when they think of a Muslim woman. And I don't think it's a good idea to minimize any group of people by defining them by one small group among them. It's what I think Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie describes it best in her TED Talk, The Danger of a Single Story. Basically, if you look at a people in one way, you minimize their humanity. And it's important to see the many varieties that people come in, that all people come in. My blog and my podcast many times have similar themes. In my blog, I chose to focus on 7 badly behaved Muslim women who made history. And the way I came up with that title, I played on a phrase that historian Laurel Thatcher Ulrich used. When she said, well-behaved women seldom make history. To me, that has always meant women who just followed what was prescribed for them and not what their souls called for. So I played upon that and I just said, badly behaved Muslim women who made history. And of course, I don't mean they've misbehaved. Anytime someone goes against status quo, whether they're male or female, they're kind of considered badly behaved. So I went with that. So I focused on certain women in particular from different time periods. And the first one that I want to talk about today is Khadija, the wife of the Prophet Muhammad. Before I continue, if you would like to chime in at any time during this podcast, you may call in, and the guest call-in number is 323-642-1775. Again, the guest call-in number is 323-642-1775. I think I might have said that incorrectly the first time, so let me say it again. 323-642-1775. Please call in with anything you want to chime in about. So getting back to Khadija, who was the Prophet's first wife. Now, I initially wasn't going to include her in this list because she didn't overtly challenged the status quo. It wasn't her intention to make history. However, she was a standout for her time. She was a widow who took over her husband's caravan. And she hired the Prophet Muhammad, who was known for his honesty and his integrity. They had a love for one another, and they married. Now, what really defied convention was that she was 40 and he was 25, 15 years older than him. Somehow, over the centuries, that became looked down upon. But during that time, this is what they both did. And it wasn't an issue. Now, she was by his side when he received his first revelation, and she was the one who encouraged him to pay attention to his revelations. She had more of a quiet fortitude instead of being overtly defiant and overtly challenging the status quo. So she is definitely in the ranks of Muslim women who made an impact. Now, when she passed on, the Prophet took other wives that were more political marriages. But another defying and defining moment that went against convention was that the Prophet never took another wife while she was alive. Now, in Saudi Arabia at that time, men could have unlimited numbers of wives, but he chose not to because he loved her. Yet again, he's doing something that's ahead of his time. So when she went to the other side, he took another wife, and one of his wives was the daughter of his best friend, Aisha. Now, she was someone who overtly challenged the status quo. She had a mind of her own, and she wasn't afraid to say what was on her mind. Now, in her time and beyond, she caught a lot of criticism for her outspoken ways. She was actually a scholar and an intellectual. Because she was by the Prophet Muhammad's side, as revelation upon revelation was coming down to him, she knew the Quran. She knew how to interpret the Quran. So she assisted the early followers of Islam in interpreting the verses. And she did this long past the Prophet's passing. She did it without him. And she saw the evolution of the Muslim community. She was right there on the front lines. And after the death of the third caliph, she even led an army in the Battle of the Camel. She lost, but didn't stop her. She continued to teach Islam, and she's known as the mother of the believers. Now, beyond the Prophet's time, another Muslim woman that I thought imperative to mention was Razia Sultana, who was the first woman sultan in the Delhi Sultanate. Now, it was custom for Muslim princesses to learn politics and battle, military strategy. She was so skilled in all of these that she impressed her father so much that he actually named her his successor over his sons, which, of course, his sons weren't too happy about. And the Turkish nobles during that time weren't happy about that either. And they buckled at that from day one. Now, Razia, she had her eyes on the prize. Now, this is 13th century India. And She had her wits about her, and she was focused on the people. She was focused on this land that she was ruling. And she made it a point to improve infrastructure and improve the lives of the people who supported her. Now, in her leadership role, another cool thing about her that showed her bucking tradition was that she refused to wear the veil. She didn't want to dress feminine because she wanted to be seen a powerful figure, and she wanted people to follow her. So she didn't wear the veil. She didn't wear the veil in her personal life. She didn't wear the veil in battle. Eventually, the nobles who supported her brother led an uprising. She fled. She married someone from a nearby region. But when they returned to Delhi, they were assassinated. So her reign was short-lived by men who refused to be led by a woman. But there's no doubt about it. She was an exceptional woman with all the capabilities to lead. She was just the wrong gender in the eyes of some. Now, another queen who came along centuries later, who caught her fair share of criticism because she was a powerful and talented woman, she was yet another exceptional woman. She was a threat because she was a woman. Now, her story is extraordinary because it should have been impossible, but it wasn't impossible for her. It was not impossible for Nur Jahan. She was the daughter of Iranian immigrants who had no real royal blood in them. And yet somehow she commingled with aristocrats. Her family got in with aristocrats, and she married a general. And in her travels, she comes across the Emperor Jahangir, who's immediately smitten with her and wants to marry her. But sure, he has a husband. There's a problem. So he basically sent the husband to a battle that he knew he wouldn't come back from. It was just a mess. And he knew that surely if he sent him out there, he would not come back. And guess what? He didn't come back. So he married Nur Jahan. Now, over time, Jahangir, even though he was the son of the Emperor Akbar, was not quite like Akbar. He was an opium addict and a heavy drinker. So eventually, his capable, competent, and intelligent wife, Nur Jahan, had to kind of fill in. Not kind of, she did fill in. And she did it well. She had royal decrees issued. She had coins made in her name, which was unheard of for an empress to do. She was running the country. And she did a damn good job, too, because she was great politically. She supported the arts. Now, of course, powerful men around her didn't appreciate her. As a matter of fact, one of the British members of the court, well, I wouldn't say he was a member of the court, but a British observer, had a real disdain for her ruling in place of her husband. He basically was just like, oh, she rules him. She just rules him. Not that she had her own merits. She just rules over her husband. He does whatever she says. Well, there was a reason. She knew what she was doing. But despite being both scorned and admired, she is a standout among royal women. And there wasn't too many quite like her. Now, move from queens to everyday women like Fatima Mernissi. So we flew from India to Morocco. Now, Fatima Mernissi grew up in a domestic harem where women were not exposed to the outside world. They weren't expected to leave the house unless they had a male member of the family with them. Now, growing up in this harem, the women weren't educated, but because in the 30s there was a nationalist fervor for Moroccans to break away from the French, and they thought the way to do that was through education, so they encouraged the women to become educated. So she took advantage of this, and she eventually got a PhD from Mohammedanieh University in Rabat, and she would eventually become a professor there. And she researched and wrote a lot, and she was brilliant. So she eventually became one of the founders of Islamic feminism. Now, of course, the conservatives were not happy with her, but there wasn't much that they could say because she wasn't inflammatory in what she wrote. And she thoroughly researched her claims through scripture. So she could back up what she said through scripture. And what she found within Islamic scripture is that there's no real basis to oppress women in Islam. There's nothing that says that you oppress women Islamically. And she could prove it. So there wasn't much that they could say to her. And she was a tough one anyway. She just said, you know, if those fanatics come to my lectures, I'll have them thrown out. They won't interrupt my work. And she said it. And she didn't allow that to happen. And so she didn't just write about equality within Islam. She actively promoted it. She would go to rural areas to give lectures and talks to women to convince them to be educated. And not only did she do that, she organized a writer's workshop for political prisoners. She thoroughly believed in Islam advocating for equality, and she pursued that. Now, I'm going to go a little further back and go to a different part of the world, to Europe during World War II, to Noor Inayat Khan, who was actually a World War II hero, who was Muslim and Russian descent, I believe. Well, in any case, her mother was Caucasian. It's escaping me now, whether it was Russia or American, but she was of Muslim heritage, born in France, but escaped France when the Nazis showed up. And then when she went to Britain, she became a secret agent for the British. She first joined the Women's Auxiliary Air Force, and she became a radio operator. So the British sent her back to France, spying for the British government. She wasn't in France for that long, probably about a year or less then, and she got betrayed and revealed to the Gestapo. She was arrested, tortured, and even after torture, she wouldn't reveal any information about what the British had planned, and she was eventually executed. But she was honored during her time, or during that time in 1949, by the British government, who gave her a George Cross for courage. So it's another bold Muslim woman who made her mark on history, and she was not a scarf wearer either. Now, I mentioned that, and I don't mean to sound cheeky, but some of the women on this list wore the hijab covered up, and some didn't. Noura Nayatan didn't cover up, and Fatima Mernissi didn't cover up. But the next two women I'm about to discuss, they do. And they're still powerhouses, whether they have their hair covered or not. So the first one I want to talk about is Tawakkol Karman. In 2011, she became the first Arab woman and second Muslim woman to win the Nobel Peace Prize. She was a journalist who reported human rights abuses and mobilized the community to rise up against it. She actually encouraged Yemen's participation in the Arab Spring, and she's known as the mother of the revolution in Yemen. She went on to found an organization called Women Journalists Without Chains, and that organization reports on social injustice and violations of human rights. She continues that fight to this day. Now, the last woman that I want to talk about, you're probably very familiar with, Malala Yousafzai. Now, this young woman was shot in the head by the Taliban in Pakistan in 2012. And what was her crime? What was her bad behavior? Wanting to go to school and being vocal about it, despite the fact that her father founded schools, started schools, and had no problem with his daughter being educated. Somehow the Taliban took it upon themselves to decide that she didn't need to be educated, nor any other girl. Well, they didn't succeed in taking her out of the equation. She survived the attack, and she thrived. To this day, she advocates for human rights and the education of girls. 2 years after being shot, she became the youngest winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. Today, she's studying at Oxford University, and she continues to advocate for the education of girls. Now, there are so many women who I didn't talk about who have made their mark on history. And they're all from different walks of life, different places around the world, different levels of religiousness. They're not all one thing. No group is just one thing. So with my blog and with my podcast, I wanted to shed some light on some of our stories, because there is no single story for any group. And hopefully I've honored these women and their stories. If you like what you've heard in this podcast and would like to hear more, I have two books available on Amazon, Scheherazade's Daughters and the Sleeky Brothers in Cairo. If you would like to read my Behind and Beyond the Veil blog, you can check it out on www.saninakmogul.com. Until next time, that's the Samina Spin. Good night and love and light.